Welcome, people, and thank you for tuning in. This is the Sports Underground Podcast with Barrett Graff.
And look who's coming up.
Only last week, I murdered a rock. Angela Stone hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick.
So let's do what we do tonight.
And now, from the Hotbox Studio in Los Angeles, which is literally an 8x10 box in Barron's garage, here's your host, Barron Graft.
Hey, what is happening, folks? The Sports Underground. I am indeed coming to you from the Hotbox Studio tonight. Listen, I talked to my buddy Ron. He had a fine time with me on the shows that we did, but, you know, he's a knob-turning guy. And, you know, that's cool. That's fine. It's not for everybody, you know, and I get that. But I will tell you this, in short order, in a very, very small amount of time, I became increasingly dependent upon my friend, Mr. Ron Guerin, to run the studio. I came in here tonight. It was like, I imagine like what people would do, like post-apocalyptic. It felt like I'd never been here before. I was like, where's the wire? What do I plug in? How did I ever make this work before? And then I'm not kidding you. This is a sad admission to make, but I'm sitting here growing infuriated because I'm like, why can't I hear my microphone and my headphones? What's going on? Yeah, I forgot to unmute. Woo! What's up, Rook? Nice. Good call. Just doing big things here in the hot box. So, got some stuff to get into tonight. I don't want to be talking about Joe Paterno. I thought I was done talking about Joe Paterno for at least a decade. I thought it was going to go forever, right? Before I even spat the name Joe Paterno off my lips one more time. I thought it was going to take forever to get to that point. And then they did it. The family of Joe Paterno went out and hired lawyers and to do lawyery things. They got people involved to basically release a report that they said. They're saying, you know, hey, the free report that was done, you know, before Sandusky was convicted on 50 some odd counts of child molestation, amongst other things. Just, you know, those things. So the Paterno family hired these lawyers to basically shoot holes in what Louis Free found. And it's really too bad because, I mean, this tells me a couple of things. One, who does this? Let's just let Joe Paterno rest in peace at this point. He's not coming back. No matter what you do, no matter what happens from this point forward, he's not coming back. Let him rest. Like, leave it alone. Jerry Sandusky's going to rot in prison. Joe Paterno is not coming back. Like, leave it alone. And so my first thought was like, who's the attorney? Who did you get? That's like I can only imagine like one attorney that would sign up for this.
As your attorney, I advise you to rent a very fast car with no top. Mm-hmm. And you'll need the cocaine.
Yeah, that guy. If you can find him, he's probably in for that. But then the second thing that I thought that I came to the realization of, and it's really kind of tragically sad, if you will, this is all they've got. If you're the Paterno family, they have to fight this hard. They have to try this hard to believe that Joe Paterno wasn't capable of covering something like this up. Because at this point, the memory of Joe Paterno is all that's left. And if they can't restore his good name, then what have they got? I mean, I think Joe knew it. and this is the bottom line for me. I think Joe knew that at the end of the day, all he had was his reputation. I think he knew. Now, look, I mean, was he compensated by the university? Sure. I'm not saying he was a poor man. Trust me, I'm not recreating the end of It's a Wonderful Life with Joe Paterno in here. But my point is this, is that after all of that is said and done, what we all leave behind here, regardless of how much money we make, regardless of what we do, our actions and our legacy is what people remember us for. Even the most wealthy individuals on earth, right? Even the richest people on earth, like Bill Gates has a ton of money. If you say Bill Gates, the first thing you think of is not the pile of cash he's sitting on, even though I'm sure he's got a chair made out of $1,000 bills. The first thing you think of is Microsoft. That's what he did. That's what he built. Similarly, the first thing I think of when I hear Phil Knight's name is Nike. And unfortunately, Phil Knight is just a blind supporter of the Paterno family and Joe Paterno. And, you know, this report came out that the Paterno family released. And sure enough, here comes Phil Knight jumping right back on the bandwagon. I mean, that's crazy. That's crazy. And the craziest thing of all to me is the title of the report. Did you get this? The title of the report that they unleashed today, the title of the findings that they came to with these lawyers is The Rush to Judgment in the Case of Joe Paterno. The Rush to Judgment. I want to make sure I get this exactly right. Sorry. Critique of the Free Report. This is the actual title. I'm not just making this up now. The Critique of the Free Report. The Rush to Injustice Regarding Joe Paterno. So let me get this straight. The problem isn't that we're talking about guilt, innocence. It's that it happened too fast. Because I feel like it's pretty damning that Jerry Sandusky was convicted on not one or two, not something like half, 55 counts Jerry Sandusky was convicted on. And whatever the Free Report says and whatever they differ on from the Paterno side, it's pretty clear that at some point in time, Joe Paterno knew. And one of the things the Paterno family takes issue with is the idea that Paterno had enough power to do something about it. Please, please spare us this one. I mean, look, you are assuming an incredible degree of stupidity on the part of the American public if you're going to try to sell that saw. Because there's nowhere on earth that someone could yield more power than Joe Paterno did in the small community. I mean, look, without the program that he built there, you've got a state university in Pennsylvania and a bunch of cattle. I mean, what's there? What's in Happy Valley? I mean, there's nothing there. You don't think that community blindly, I mean, just pay attention to what's happened just in this one incident. And you can see that that's a community that blindly supports Joe Paterno. I think it's very easy to understand how that power could be used in a good or a bad way. But my favorite is the idea, let's not rush to injustice. The rush to injustice. Let's not rush things. Let's slow everything down. Really? This is the message. You mean like, let's not be too hasty about it. Let's sit on this information that we've had for over a decade. Let's sit on it a little more. Joe Paterno clearly knew what Jerry Sandusky was doing in 1998. He certainly didn't rush to bring Jerry Sandusky to justice. But now suddenly we're going too fast for you? This is happening? Oh, it's too much? We don't want to do it this quick? Sorry, Sandusky. Sorry, Paterno family. You don't get to write the rules anymore. This is already water over the dam. And stuff like this, just, it infuriates me. Because I'll tell you what is absolutely lost in all of this. And to his credit, Joe Paterno said it. Whether or not it was sincere, I don't want to make that judgment. But Joe Paterno, at one point in time, when this whole thing broke loose, asked everybody to pray for the victims. I would implore his family to do anything that indicated that they had the true victims of this incident on their mind. Because if they had any regard for those folks, for those kids and those families, they would never bring this back to light. This is a slap in the face to every single victim of Jerry Sandusky's crimes. It's an absolute slap in the face. And it further indicates, to me at least, that the Paterno family has no regard for the crimes that were committed. All they are concerned with, which I believe is what Joe Paterno was concerned with the entire time, is the legacy of the Paterno name. Not Penn State, the legacy of the Paterno name and what that means. And I'll tell you what, I think the NCAA, for once, you will not hear me say this very often, I think they got this one absolutely right. I think stripping Paterno of his wins, making the team vacate those, I think they got it absolutely right. Because here's the bottom line. If the Paterno family had any regard for the program that Joe Paterno built at Penn State, they would let this die and they would let the program try to move forward without them. But they don't care about that. They only care about themselves. This is a blind play to try to restore the name Paterno. And you can buy it if you want. I'm just not that gullible. I'm just not in. And I suspect nobody else is either. I would hope that nobody else is in on this. Because it's absolutely ridiculous. Read the report yourself. I found it on Deadspin. You can find it. Go read the report yourself. See if you think it has any credence. Maybe it does for you. I don't know. I watched my first college basketball game tonight. Watch Kansas and Kansas State mix it up, throwing it around. Of course, when those two teams get together, it's going to be, you're going to get a game right there. And they like to mix that. That's a rivalry right there. But look, I'm still only kind of interested in college basketball. Now, I will say, I was pretty rough on college basketball last week. It kind of happens to me every year after the Super Bowl. I kind of get this hangover from the Super Bowl, and I don't want anything to be happening. I'm just like, why are sports happening? Football's over. Come on. But we've got good news this week, right? Because you've got pitchers and catchers reporting for Major League Baseball. And, the NBA is underway. And there's some stories out there in the NBA. And it's just one of those things where it's like, I don't really want to move on after football for a little while. But that's where we're at. Now, I saw something else kind of interesting. Last week, Ravens football player Brendan Iambadejo, I hope I said his name right, came out and basically said that, sooner or later that professional sports is going to have an openly gay athlete and that athlete will be the Jackie Robinson of their era. And I completely 100% agree with this assertion. By the way, also have a new favorite football player. I think that the bottom line for me is this. Who cares what you do off the field, off the court, with your own self? Who cares? Just like any other job on earth, who cares what you do when you're not on the clock? If you show up and you get the job done and you could do it at such an elite level that you could play sports professionally, why should it matter? And I think that was kind of the point Ian Badejo was making, is like, it doesn't matter. Show up, do your thing, and hey, let the chips fall where they may. And that it, and the thing that he said that I've said on this show before that I thought was very, very pertinent was that if an athlete, an openly homosexual athlete, was going to gain acceptance by our culture, that it would take straight athletes within that community of that sport accepting that person for the nation's consciousness to follow. And I absolutely could not agree with that more. Because even during segregation, you know, the passing of Stan Musial, there are some really amazing stories that came out of that. And one of the most amazing stories was, you know, Willie Mays was telling a story about playing in an all-star game. And the black players were in the clubhouse, and they were sitting off to the side by themselves playing cards. And it was still like, even though the game was desegregated, the locker room was still very much divided in a lot of ways. The black players stuck with the black players, so on and so forth, in a lot of cases. And Stan Musial, being Stan Musial, walks up to the game and just says, "Hey, deal me in." And that's Stan Musial's way of bringing equality to the table, just treating everybody the same. It's going to take guys like that with gay athletes for this to really happen and really gain any level of acceptance. And so it's hard for me when I see stuff like, you might remember a little while back, Kobe Bryant got into a bit of a media flap, and he called a ref slang for homosexual. And it's one of those things where it's like, you can judge this however you want to, right? But a couple of days ago, Kobe Bryant, you know, on his Twitter feed, a guy jumped on his Twitter feed and basically used a gay slur on his Twitter feed. And Kobe responded saying that, you know, using that slur as a way to put someone down ain't okay, and to delete that out of your vocabulary. Now, you can read this one way or another. And it's interesting because somebody fired right back at him, calling him out. You know, come on, Kobe, you called a ref a slur, you know. And he said, "Hey, that wasn't cool. It was ignorant on my part. I own it, learn from it, and expect the same from others." It's interesting, man. I mean, it's such a weird thing because it's like, God, I really want to believe Kobe Bryant on this one. Don't you? I think I have to. I have to give him the benefit of the doubt on this one. Because, and I was the first person to say that when Kobe Bryant made the gay slur in that game, yelling at a ref, I was the first person to talk about how wrong that was, how poor that was, what a bad example that was. And so for him to reverse course, and this is the thing, right? He reversed course and is saying this stuff on his Twitter feed. Now, Twitter's a public forum, but look, if he let that go, if he didn't respond to that, it's not like anybody's going to jump on him because he didn't make that statement. Somebody on his Twitter feed made that statement. And so for him to pick up his phone or pick up his iPad or whatever he was on and come back on him and say, hey, you can't, that's not cool. You got to knock that off. That's not cool. I'm not cool with that. He didn't have to do that. And then when he's accused of being a hypocrite or whatever, the statement of saying, hey, that wasn't cool when I did that. It was ignorant on my part. And I own that and I've learned from that. For me, I have to believe him. And it doesn't mean that I have to agree that he was right the first time he did it. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not even saying that I think that it's appropriate that it took something on that level for him to learn this lesson. But what I will say is that I cannot think, for the life of me, I cannot think of a single reason why Kobe Bryant would need to do this or would want to do this unless it's truly how he felt. Because, you know, just a couple of weeks back, we saw the San Francisco 49ers and Chris Culver and the comments he was making about homosexuals. And then obviously a very forced and stilted red statement from him following that incident when he makes the homophobic slur. He then reads this forced statement. And at the time, Kobe Bryant did the exact same thing. And I criticized him for it then too. But for the life of me, I cannot figure out why he would do this. Kobe Bryant now. I can't figure out why he would do this if it wasn't on some level his genuine thoughts and feelings. At 1:15 in the morning, nonetheless, he responds to this. So it's not like it's in the middle of a media scrum. It's not like it's in the middle of the day when everybody's monitoring their Twitter feed. I think that Kobe Bryant, I think that maybe he did learn from that. And it's going to take victories like that all along the way to make that thing work, to make it work, to create an environment where a gay player could be welcomed on a professional sports team. I don't think we're that far away from it. I really don't. Because here's the thing. For everybody who wants to say, well, how can you say we're not that far away from it? I mean, Chris Culver just 2 weeks ago playing for the Super Bowl is making these statements. Clearly, this is still an issue. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that it's just going to be all hunky-dory. Just like segregation in baseball, racial segregation was not an easy thing. And the earliest black players in Major League Baseball were treated horrifically. If you don't know the history of that, look that up. I mean, you want to talk about some really rough play, some really uncalled for aggression. Those guys blazed the trail. And it's not that it's going to be all hunky-dory tomorrow, but here's my point. A decade ago, if a player going into the Super Bowl week had made the same statements that Culver made this year, it's not that there are people that don't disagree with that. I think people will disagree with it just as much as they do now on a lot of levels. But I don't think any single player, much less multiple players, would have come out and publicly condemned him for saying those things. The fact that you have players that are willing to come out to the media and condemn other players in their own league for making those statements, to me, is an indication of progress. And unfortunately, even though it seems like common sense to me, and I think to a lot of you, that it doesn't really matter who you sleep with at night, if you can play when you're on the court or on the field, who cares? Right? That seems fairly obvious to me. Not obvious to everybody. And there are a lot of different reasonings and arguments and points that people would take away. None of them good, but they're out there. So for me, at least, I have to take things like this. I have to take the small victories. And I have to applaud an athlete like Kobe Bryant when he reverses his own course. And not because someone is forcing him to do so. I think for the most part, people, maybe not completely, but had largely forgotten about Kobe making a homophobic slur towards an official. Not that it was gone forever. And don't let me insult anybody out there that's listening that might be gay or lesbian, bisexual, whatever. I don't want to insult anybody and suggest that that wasn't a dramatic thing. But for most of America, in the mainstream consciousness, if you will, that was a forgotten incident. It happened. It was over. It had its 15 minutes and it's gone. Kobe has no reason to do this. This doesn't change what he did. It doesn't help him in any way. So unless this is genuinely how he now feels, unless a change was genuinely made within his consciousness, he wouldn't be saying this stuff. I'm not a Kobe defender. If you've ever talked to me or ever listened to me, you will know that I'm no big fan of Kobe Bryant. I largely do not care for the way that he carries himself, either on the court, off the court as a leader, as a role model, if you will. I largely do not care for the man. I have to take this as a small victory. Because what else can you do? What else can you do? So that's it on Kobe. I mean, it's weird because right now the Lakers are a complete disaster. If you're not in LA, if you're not paying attention to the Lakers, complete disaster town for the Lakers. I mean, the team can't win. They can't beat anybody good. Let me put it that way. They were down big to the Charlotte Bobcats the other night and made a comeback to win. You got Kobe calling out Dwight Howard in the media. You got Dwight Howard coming back on Kobe. You got Dwight Howard's dad sounding off in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Then you got Mike D'Antoni and Steve Nash calling out Dwight Howard. And Steve Nash has never called anybody out. When do you remember Steve Nash going out publicly and being like, dude, you need to play harder? And let's remember that he played a lot of years with Amari Stoudemire, by the way. I'm just saying, if it's just Kobe, then okay, maybe that's a clash between two personalities. But when you got Kobe, you got Steve Nash now, you got both of them, plus the coach, that means Dwight ain't playing as hard as he can. And they know it. And here's the problem that I have with the whole thing. The problem I have with the whole thing is that all anybody, at least in LA, is talking about is what's wrong with Dwight? What's wrong? They got the wrong coach. You know who this all squarely lands with? This all squarely lands in the lap of Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak. I don't know if you remember it or not, but Mitch Kupchak has not always been the GM of the Los Angeles Lakers. And for the most part, the success that the Lakers experienced was built on things that were done before Mitch Kupchak was running the show. I think you might remember, you know, just a little piece of Laker history. Let's not get it twisted up. Jerry West, as the general manager, built the Los Angeles Lakers. He's the guy that built the Shaq and Kobe dynasty. Mitch Kupchak was there, but not leading the charge. And hey, by the way, the whole reason the Lakers won after Shaq was gone was because they got a guy named Pau Gasol. Hey, do you know where they got Pau Gasol from? Oh, Memphis. You know who the GM was at Memphis? Jerry West. So I think that if I am an intelligent Laker fan, I think I can look at everything that's going on right now, and I think I can say, hey, why don't we fire the general manager first? Okay? Because let's remember, it's Mitch Kupchak that couldn't keep Kobe and Shaq in the same locker room. It's Mitch Kupchak that couldn't keep Phil Jackson around. It's Mitch Kupchak that bought in on Andrew Bynum way too hard and held on way too long. It's Mitch Kupchak who refused to see the writing on the wall with Derek Fisher and how he was aging and couldn't guard anybody at the point guard position, and remedied that by bringing in Steve Nash. It's Mitch Kupchak that went all in for Dwight Howard to try to make one more run for Kobe. And look, they didn't give up anything to get Dwight Howard, but I think we're starting to see why nobody else was offering anything for him. I think we can take, and that's not even to bring up the fact that they've got the wrong coach and that they bungled the whole, what should have been the rehiring of Phil Jackson. Can't I trace every problem that the Lakers have right now? Can't I trace it all back to Mitch Kupchak? Can't I put it all right back in his lap? I don't know. I mean, call me crazy. But for me, I'm looking at that and I'm going, you got the wrong GM. And listen, the Los Angeles Lakers are to the NBA and are to the city of Los Angeles what the New York Yankees are to baseball in New York. They are what the New England Patriots have been to Boston. What the Green Bay Packers at times have been to Green Bay. Where this is a city and a culture that is unwilling to accept the Los Angeles Lakers. There's no rebuilding years if you're a Laker fan. Right? Are you with me, Laker fan? Do you pay too much for your tickets? Do you pay too much for your cable package to watch your basketball team to have down years? I feel like if I'm putting that much in the middle to be a fan of my team, if I'm paying more at the gate, paying more at the counter, paying more at the cable box, don't I get to hold my team to a higher standard? I mean, look, it's a loud and clear message. If you play poor and run your organization poorly, you get no turnout. I mean, look, the Miami Marlins opened their ticket window for single season or single game ticket sales the other day. I mean, there are about 8 people waiting in line. You know why? Because they're a poorly run organization. Because they put a product on the field that people don't want to watch. Because they've spent way too much on their stadium, asked way too much of their community, and given back far too little. So I don't have a problem with Laker fan holding their management and their team to a higher regard and a higher standard. I mean, at least show some signs of life. I'll give Kobe this. At least he's showing signs of life. At least he's not just rolling over. He's the one guy that seems to care right now. He's the one guy that seems to care about what happens. And I think it's because he knows this is kind of his last run. He's maybe got a couple of more years. Unless they do something drastic to change the team around him, I don't see how much longer he can last as a number one scorer. You know, I just don't. And, you know, speaking of the Marlins and opening their gates, single game tickets going on sale. I mean, look, you're talking about there are some communities in baseball where the line, there's not even a line because those tickets are impossible to get. They're already gone before they've even started being sold. Right? The Marlins opened their window to 9 people. 9. Hey, have fun rebuilding again, Miami. At least your basketball team's good because nothing else really is. But I'll tell you what makes me happy. That means it's almost baseball season again. Pitchers and catchers report. Some pitchers and catchers reported on Monday, some on Tuesday. They're coming in. It's getting started. And I'll tell you what, it's kind of been, it's been a weird off season, right? I mean, I don't know if you've been paying attention to what's going on, but the Cleveland Indians are approaching this year's free agency period and the off season kind of in the same way that the Los Angeles Police Department conducts a manhunt. I mean, it's just kind of like shoot first, ask questions last. Let's just bring in everybody. And, you know, it starts when you hire Terry Francona, which I do think is a good hire. But, you know, it just starts there. And then you bring in Nick Swisher, good hire. Mark Reynolds, okay. Drew Stubbs, cool. Mike Avias, great. Jason Giambi, questionable. Michael Bourne, 4 years, $48 million. Wow. Brett Myers, Scott Kazmir, Daisuke Matsuzaka. Oh my gosh. I mean, this is just crazy. I mean, this is just literally like, it's like the Blues Brothers of baseball, man. It's just like we are getting the gang back together. Let's just throw everybody in a big barrel and see what rolls out. And the crazy thing is, it might work because Terry Francona is a very good manager. And he had a rough go at the end of his run in Boston. I think you can certainly make a case for the fact that that's an organization that gave him a raw deal at the end. But, I mean, this is going to be interesting. It's not going to be boring, Cleveland, okay? You can just take that to the bank. Whatever you know about this year's baseball season, know this. It's not going to be boring in Cleveland. It's going to be interesting at least. It's already shaping up to be a very, very interesting year just based on player movement. I mean, remember, in the AL East, you've got basically the entire Miami Marlins roster moved to Toronto. Oh, and R.A. Dickey. And suddenly, it's not crazy to think that Toronto has a legitimate shot at competing for that division with the Yankees. You've got the whole Alex Rodriguez steroid craziness happening. You got a lot of stuff going on. And at the very least, you know, this ain't going to be boring. And that is what I love about this time of year in Major League Baseball. Because right now, every single team is exactly as far away from first place as they are from last. And everybody's got the same hope that things can be different. Now, for some of you out there, like the folks in Miami, we call that delusion. But for the rest of the league, that's what we call hope. And in spring, hope springs eternal in baseball. And that's why it's a great time of the year. Now, we've talked a lot about the different leagues and different that. The AL East is basically going to come down to the Yankees and the Blue Jays. We'll see what happens. So that's it. That's the show. Hope you all have a great week. And whatever you do, do one thing. keep right.
You have been listening to the Sports Underground Podcast, and you know we always welcome your take. You can find the Sports Underground on Facebook, so go ahead and like it. If you want to download, hit us up on iTunes. And remember, come back again next time and get some.